Good morning, friends, and welcome to our commemoration of 100 years of the United Lodge of Theosophists in Philadelphia. Our meeting this morning will have four parts. We're going to begin with a reading of the Declaration and the announcements, followed by a reading from the first issue of Theosophical Independence, published by the United Lodge of Theosophists in March 1st, 2002. We'll then move to a brief description of the life and work of the United Lodge of Theosophists in Philadelphia. And then we'll have a consideration of the Declaration of the United Lodge of Theosophists, taking a sort of deep dive into its various phrases, examining their origin, historical necessity, and the laws upon which they are based. And then after that, we will open the meeting to your questions and comments. So we'll begin then with a volunteer who will present the Declaration of the United Lodge of Theosophists and the announcements.
The Declaration of the United Lodge of Theosophists. The policy of this lodge is independent devotion to the cause of theosophy without professing attachment to any theosophical organization. It is loyal to the great founders of the theosophical movement, but does not concern itself with dissensions or differences of individual opinion. The work it has on hand and the end it keeps in view are too absorbing and too lofty to leave it the time or inclination to take part in side issues. That work and that end is the dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of theosophy, and the exemplification and practice of those principles through a truer realization of the self, a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. It holds that the unassailable basis for union among theosophists, wherever and however situated, is similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching, and therefore has neither constitution, bylaws, nor officers, the sole bond between its associates being that basis. And it aims to disseminate this idea among theosophists in the furtherance of unity. It regards as theosophists all who are engaged in the true service of humanity without distinction of race, creed, sex, condition, or organization. And it welcomes to its association all those who are in accord with its declared purposes and who desire to fit themselves by study and otherwise to be the better able to help and teach others. The true theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all. This is the schedule of activities for the week of February 16th, 2025 at the Philadelphia Lodge, located at 1917 Walnut Street. Lodge meetings are open to the public, and everyone is invited to attend them. Meetings are held on Sunday mornings, Wednesday, and Friday evenings. This year, the Lodge, as mentioned, celebrates its 100th anniversary. Last month, the new year was brought in with a quote by Robert Crosby, which was part of an exhibit at the main library on the Parkway at 19th Street. Crosby explained why New Year resolutions fail and that they should be worded positively to succeed. The exhibit was housed in two display units. One was of the modern theosophical movement in general, founded in 1875, and the other of ULT's 100-year presence in Philadelphia since 1925. The exhibit can be thought of as a preliminary to this month's anniversary celebration. At the Lodge on Sunday mornings, presentations are based on a monthly theme in the format of a lecture or panel discussion. The theme in January was the path of spiritual evolution. The theme this month is the Theosophical Movement in Philadelphia. On the first Sunday, the panel discussed the life and work of William Penn. Last Sunday, it was Thomas Paine as a great theosophist. Today's lecture, of course, is commemorating the ULT in Philly. And next Sunday, the last lecture will be on the presence and influence of Freemasonry in Philadelphia. Theosophy Hall opens at 10:30. The meeting begins at 11 and ends at 12 noon. Both the Sunday and Wednesday meetings are Zoom and on-site accessible. On Wednesday evenings, the reference library is open from 6:15 until 7:15. The study class begins at 7:30 and ends at 8:45. The book being used is The Ocean of Theosophy by William Q. Judge. We have completed the chapters on reincarnation and will begin the study of karma in chapter 11 this Wednesday. It is entitled Karma, Universal Law of Harmony. Straight line theosophical materials may be purchased during library hours and before and after meetings on Wednesdays and Sundays, or purchased directly from Theosophy Company in Los Angeles, California, or downloaded for free from the Phoenix Lodge website. On Friday evenings, the informal roundtable discussion group meeting is from 6:30 to 7:30. It is Zoom accessible only. Various topics are discussed. Some are from the In the Light of Theosophy series, as was the topic on happiness this past Friday. Each Monday, a notice is emailed identifying topics to be covered for the week, including the references or other class-related details. Of note, in the month of March, on a date close to the anniversary of the death of William Q. Judge, who passed on March 21, 1896, a commemorative service will be held. Please plan to attend. Lodge activities are sustained by voluntary contributions of time, money, and work. If interested in contributing in this way, please contact this or any of the lodges. Assistance is always appreciated. That concludes the announcements. This reading is from The Theosophical Independence, the first issue, the first page, March 2002. It was published by the United Lodge of Theosophists in Philadelphia. The history of human freedom and independence is determined by the conflict of ideas, the moral courage of great people, and the impact of decisive events. One lesson to be learned from this history is that freedom and independence are secured by individual self-reliance and collective responsibility. The character of freedom has many faces: national, political, social, economic, and individual. The essential quality shared by all these expressions of freedom is independence, self-determination in the conduct of action. The one virtue that protects that independence is the individual and collective willingness to follow a bedrock of principles. Such principles have been expressed by Pericles to the Athenians and by Jefferson in the Declaration of Independence. They have been institutionalized in the Magna Carta and the Constitution of the United States. The real miracle at Philadelphia was the willingness of free, independent, and autonomous states with different interests to submit themselves to principles and laws that would govern all. Without this binding unity of principles, fragmentation and disintegration would eventually result. The independence won through struggle would inevitably be lost. Human freedom and independence changes in character as the meaning of freedom and independence evolves. What is the meaning of theosophical independence? It has been said that whenever thought has struggled to be free, there can be found some aspect of the theosophical movement. Freedom of thought seems to be the essential quality of theosophical independence. This is an expression of freedom that transcends and includes national, political, social, economic, and individual freedom. It is independence that is not secured by nor bound to any one declaration of principles or institution of human laws. Theosophical independence cannot be granted by any human law. This self-determination is an inherent quality of the soul. The thinker is gifted with free and independent action expressed as free will, free choice, self-induced and self-devised effort. Even the self-determination of the thinker is balanced by a willingness to follow self-evident principles. Unlike human laws, these principles are expressions of truth, knowledge, and experience. They are observable universal laws in nature. These principles form the internal ruler and moral compass by which the independent thinkers internally monitor and guide their actions. Again, our lecture for today is entitled Commemorating ULT in Philadelphia, its 100th anniversary.
The United Lodge of Theosophists was founded in Los Angeles, California on February 18, 1909. On that same day, February 18th, in 1925, the United Lodge of Theosophists opened in Philadelphia. February 18th was not chosen randomly, nor is it a coincidence. It is a date of astronomical, astrological, and symbolic significance to the ancient Hindus. For according to their astronomical records, the Kali Yuga, marking a new cycle in the progress of human evolution, began somewhere between February 17th and February 18th in the year 3102 BC. No cycle has an absolute starting and ending point, but one cycle gradually blends into a new cycle. In this sense, the formation of the United Lodge of Theosophists began when Robert Crosby, anticipating the formation of ULT, sent a memorandum to many individual Theosophists on November 17, 1908, corresponding to the formation of the Theosophical Society on November 17, 1875. This memorandum, entitled to all open-minded theosophists contain much of the wording of the Declaration of the United Lodge of Theosophists as we now have it. Exactly 1 year later, ULT was founded. Its declaration was adopted by him and seven original associates, some of which had been members of the Theosophical Society. Similarly, the ULT in Philadelphia began a few years earlier than 1925, when two women from the suburbs of Philadelphia went to the ULT Lodge in New York weekly for a few years to study directly with B.P. Wadia and the New York Associates. They studied the fundamental teachings of the philosophy as recorded in the writings of H.P. Blavatsky and William Q. Judge, and they studied how to effectively exemplify and promulgate those teachings. The lodge in Philadelphia has changed locations in Center City, Philadelphia, four times since it finally settled at its current location, 1917 Walnut Street, in 1945. Interestingly enough, its first Sunday meeting in its Delancey Street location was held on December 7th, 1941, the Day of Infamy, when the Japanese Navy attacked the U.S. Pacific Fleet at Pearl Harbor, a few hours earlier, drawing the U.S. into World War II. Perhaps that is the keynote to commemorate the four generations of associates who kept the work unbroken and uninterrupted, week after week, regardless of world events, personal obstacles, family and civil duties, financial difficulties, illness, and disruptive weather. When we commemorate the work of ULT in Philadelphia as part of the presence of the larger theosophical movement in Philadelphia, we are not honoring the individual works, writings, and speeches of great persons such as William Penn or Thomas Paine, nor are we highlighting the valuable influence of great organized institutions such as the Freemasons. Rather, we are pausing to express our gratitude to our predecessors in Philadelphia, who by quiet, impersonal, anonymous sacrifice and devotion of common persons in their unity accomplished great things. They made our opportunity possible and made their mark on the theosophical movement in Philadelphia, the United States, and the world. That first generation of associates of ULT from 1925 to 1950 would face its challenges. In 1925, the seeds of world turmoil were planted that would cause unprecedented suffering for millions. Mussolini assumed dictatorial powers in Italy. Adolf Hitler published his Mein Kampf, outlining his ideology and plans for Germany. Then, a few years later, the Great Depression followed the overnight crashing of the stock market. Nevertheless, those early generation of associates in Philadelphia built a foundation for the work in Philadelphia that continues to this day. If, as William Q. Judge wrote, wherever thought has struggled to be free from forms and dogmatism, there is to be discerned the great movement of spiritual ideas. We have seen that traces of the theosophical movement were already present in the history of Philadelphia. Through the influence of William Penn, Philadelphia became a center of independent self-government based on representation of the common consent of the people and for the general benefit of the people, rather than government by the dictates of an external authority. It was a center for freedom from religious persecution and efforts towards equal rights for all. Through the influence of the writings of Thomas Paine, Philadelphia became a center from which the bell of liberty, freedom, and independence would ring and be heard around the world. The force of Paine's written words sparked a desire for unity of the different colonies on the basis of principles of common sense and a common purpose and aim. The influence and presence of the Freemasons, which was especially strong in Philadelphia during the formation of this country, was a center for universal brotherhood, human rights, religious freedom, and service to humanity. It is not surprising, then, that the influence of the United Lodge in Philadelphia on the movement has had the character of these predecessors. As a lodge, its character is colored more by the heart than the intellect. The expression of the philosophy from its platform emphasizes simplicity of expression, practical application, and brotherhood. Locally, its independent associates have carried the message of the fundamental principles of theosophy into schools, colleges, prisons, and even centers of worship. Its associates have worked for cooperation, unity, and communication between the lodges through the 14 years of the monthly publication of the Theosophical Independence periodical, which was distributed to all the lodges around the world. It developed interlodge symposiums between New York, Philadelphia, and Washington, D.C., and later extended through the internet and Zoom technology to lodges on the West Coast, Europe, and India. International Theosophy conferences open to associates and members of different theosophical lodges and organizations were hosted by Philadelphia on two occasions, once at Haverford College in cooperation with its Department of Philosophy, and once at the Friends Select School. It has worked in cooperation with other Philadelphia institutions, such as the Philadelphia Historical Society, the Philadelphia Free Library, and most notably the Masonic Temple, in order to bring together associates from other lodges and make the teachings more available to the general public. Perhaps because most of that first generation of associates and workers were members of several families or extended families, the Philadelphia ULT has always made it a point to welcome every visitor to the lodge or our Zoom meetings as part of our Theosophical family and extend them the respect and goodwill we would offer to any guest in our home. The lodge in Philadelphia is not just the center from which the philosophy is promulgated. It is a light in the darkness, a warm hand in the solitude, and a refuge from the world's turmoil. And now we'll take up for consideration those ideas expressed in the Declaration of the United Lodge of Theosophists, which is the basis for operation of all ULTs around the world, as well as in Philadelphia. So at the beginning, we have this phrase, the United Lodge of Theosophists. Where did that come? How did it come about? In an article called Plain Theosophical Traces, published by William Q. Judge in the Path magazine in 1892, he refers to the quote, old and united lodge of adepts. He makes the point that the Theosophical Society was not the only one through which the effort was made on behalf on humanity's thought and ethics, but in many different ways, efforts were constantly put forward. No single organization is the sole channel. Those who work for the good of humanity, whether they be adepts, theosophists, or not, do not care about mere names. It is the substantive effort they seek. In a letter on behalf of the newly formed and independent Theosophical Society to the Convention of the European Theosophists, or the European section of the Theosophical Society in 1895, he refers to the quote, Universal Lodge of Free and Independent Theosophists, whose members include every friend of the human race. Nevertheless, he writes, the Theosophical Society wears the badge of the Eastern and ancient schools, the distinctive marks and signs of the quote, Old and United Lodge of Adepts. These marks, these signs are incorporated into the Declaration of the United Lodge of Theosophists. And that declaration declares the purposes of ULT. In the first paragraph, we hear these words. The policy of this lodge is independent devotion to the cause of theosophy without professing attachment to any theosophical organization. Why is this? The movement, the theosophical movement, transcends and includes all times, places, peoples, and environments. It does not depend on forms, ceremonies, particular persons, or set organizations. William Q. Judge wrote in that same letter to the European section, let, quote, let us press forward in the great work of the real theosophical movement, which is aided by working organizations, but is above them all. Together, we can devise more and better ways for spreading the light of truth through all the earth. End quote. Now, the first, well, paragraphs 2 and 3 of the Declaration, well, actually, paragraphs 1 and 2 of the Declaration of the United Lodge of Theosophists are taken from directly from an article by William Q. Judge, the second year, published in the Path magazine in April 1887. And the historical context is this. The magazine was just entering its second year. And even though starting with little financial support or resources, had achieved widespread circulation, influence, and respect throughout the Theosophical movement. Even HPB praised its remarkable success. In accounting for its success and appeal in America, Europe, India, Russia, and Australia, Judge pointed to its policy of devotion to the spread of the idea of universal brotherhood, which aims to benefit all from the lowest to the highest. He wrote in that article, quote, "The Path magazine will continue its policy of independent devotion to the cause of theosophy without professing to be the organ of either the society or any branch. It is loyal to the great founders of the society, but does not concern itself with dissensions or differences of individual opinion. The work it has on hand and the end it keeps in view are too absorbing and too lofty to leave it the time or inclination to take part in side issues. The Path wishes all its readers progress in the knowledge of the great and vital truths of theosophy, a truer realization of the self, a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood." Later in that same letter to the European Convention, when the Theosophical Society in America became independent of the General Theosophical Society, he wrote, quote, "Mutually assisting and encouraging one another, we may learn how to put theosophy into practice so as to be able to teach and enforce it by example before others." And then in the third paragraph of the Declaration, we have the presentation of the basis of unity, as it is not an organization with constitution, bylaws, officers. And that unity is based on a similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching. In an article, The Theosophical Movement, published by Judge in August 1895, he wrote, quote, "To worship an organization, even though it be the beloved Theosophical one, is to fall down before form. It does not preserve unity. The real unity, prevalence, and internationalism does not consist in having a single organization. They are to be found in the similarity of aim, aspiration, of purpose, of teaching, of ethics." In the fourth paragraph, we hear. It regards as theosophists all who are engaged in the true service of humanity without distinction of race, creed, sex, condition, or organization. The fourth paragraph defines who is a theosophist, one who is engaged in this true service of humanity. And it does not take into consideration who is doing the service or where it's directed. In The Key to Theosophy, HPB addresses what is due to humanity at large. What is the right of every human being? What is the true service? And this is found on page 230 to 231. And we think in understanding these words by HPB, we can understand why we can say with confidence that the efforts of individuals such as Thomas Paine and William Penn and Freemasons in Philadelphia is part of the larger theosophical movement. She tells us what is due to humanity at large. Quote, full recognition of equal rights and privileges for all, and without distinction of race, color, social position, or birth, end quote. When we fail in our duty to humanity, she says, quote, when there is the slightest invasion of another's right, be that other man or a nation, when there is any failure to show him the same justice, kindness, consideration, or mercy which we desire for ourselves, we can see within that duty the principles of universal brotherhood, unity, karma, cause and effect. And finally, the end quote, which is also a vital part of the pledge and often a mystery to those who read it for the first time. Quote, the true theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all. Where did that come from? In the Path magazine, February 1880 issue, William Q. Judd answered an inquiry from someone who stated that they had studied theosophy for several years and even the yoga theosophy for 3 years, but still seemed unsatisfied with their progress. And in their question, they were asking for William Q. Judd for help in how to proceed. He wrote, quote, you say that for 3 years you have been endeavoring to study theosophy. Such being the case, you will meet with little success. Divine wisdom is not a subject for study, but it may be an object of search. With the love of this same wisdom uppermost in our heart, we ask if you would not be wiser to lay aside the study of so-called theosophy and study yourself. Knowing yourself, you know all men, the world seen and occult, and find theosophia. Our conception of theosophy is apt to be based on the idea that it is an especial line of teaching, a larger, wider, and greater than others, perhaps, but still a doctrine, and therefore limited. You must bear in mind that the true theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all. That he can find the true object of his search equally as well in the Hebrew Bible, as in yoga philosophy, in the New Testament, equally as in the Bhagavad Gita. So these are the principles in the declaration, principles that struck at the heart of those first generations of associates in Philadelphia in 1925, that continued throughout the turmoil of the 20th century and into the 21st century. It is these same principles that inspire us and form the backbone and foundation of the work we do. And although the message may change, we have the opportunity to utilize the internet, the World Wide Web, and various supreme technologies to disseminate these ideas impersonally, to stay true to the teachings, and to reach out to others who may have no other access to the philosophy, even those who cannot read, but yet can understand an animation. So much possibility. And yet, it all comes down to, again, the interpersonal relationship, the attitude we have to one another, and our commitment to forming a nucleus of universal brotherhood here in Philadelphia, from which that influence can spread to our neighborhoods, to our nation, and to the world at large. We don't do this alone. We do this with the help and support and influence of all other similar associations, whether they call themselves theosophists or theosophical or not, present around the world. But still, in their own way, they are inspired by the same spiritual truths of unity, of causation, of evolution, and of the ideal of human perfectibility. And we will stop here and allow you the opportunity to reflect and comment or ask questions in the spirit of commemorating the 100th anniversary of the ULT in Philadelphia. Yes, Theosophy Hall.
So after the discussion on the Declaration, we didn't hear anything about the fact that promulgation of these ideas, that we shouldn't be going out and handing out, flyers to people, stand on corners, that sort of thing. So we kind of wait until people come to us, but there's nothing in the Declaration that says anything against promulgation.
Well, the purpose of the lodge is for the promulgation of the teachings of Theosophy as recorded in the writings of H.P.V. and William Q. Judge. But keeping in mind the underlying thought that any real progress of an individual is but an extension of their own understanding and belief, an extension of their own understanding and free will. It is not our purpose to force feed or challenge their prevailing convictions. If they find that their thoughts, their convictions are in some way unsatisfactory, and they are engaged in that individual search for truth, they will find it. It's always been there in the world. They may find it in their own tradition, whether it be an Eastern or Western one, it doesn't matter. But as long as we keep the presence of Theosophy available, whether it's through public advertising, announcements on the internet, announcements that are building, as long as we keep the door open, the light on, the availability there, they will come. What is that expression from the movie, Field of Dreams? If you build it, they will come. Yes, the Osiph Hall.
So, we often hear discussion about other theosophical groups. The first, of course, being the Theosophical Society, the ULT being a back to basics, we could say, back to the basic principles. And then there's other groups too. There's Point Loma, there's those that follow Alice Bailey and other latter-day teachers. Did they improve on the philosophy? Is there some reason we don't study these other teachings of other groups?
Well, it is the history of human thought that once a seed idea is presented, it grows in all directions. It can grow straight, it can grow sideways, it can decay, it can bloom. And so it is with the history of ideas. Whenever a great founder of a certain line of thought has put forth their ideas in time, those teachings either become diluted or distorted or changed according to the understanding, the prevailing character and interest of the individual and the people to which it comes. A study of theosophy, though, would remind us that there is an underlying ocean of spiritual truth that has always existed in the world and has been flowing and present in all the different great world religions and philosophies. And as said, it can be found there. What H.P.B. did, and William Pugh Judge, her co-worker, is not invent anything new, but bring together from those various traditions, along with the recorded and preserved teachings of the Lodge, Universal Lodge of Adepts, those spiritual ideas which can be found in all traditions, primarily that individuals from whatever nation or race or conviction can come together, and by studying the truth that's in all, study the truth that's in their own. By understanding their own, understanding the all. Unity and diversity, diversity and unity. And so it is the purpose of ULT to preserve this original message, to allow people the opportunity to educate themselves in these teachings, to make their own determination, to check, test, and verify, to see if it makes sense. And then it's their individual choice to explore other theosophical writings or other sources of theosophical wisdom. That's up to them. That's part of their individual journey. And they'll find evidences of it. But the key to a theosophical education, as at least presented and given the opportunity to ULT, is to get firsthand knowledge of what these universal truths are, to get the ruler, to get the means by which other ideas can be measured, to get the universal perspective before going into the particular examination. So it's a different approach, which does not exclude all others, but as said, our purpose is too absorbing and lofty to allow us the time or inclination or opportunity to go all in all to these thousands of different systems and different interpretations. Rather, our effort is to focus, to concentrate on the work at hand, gain a fundamental understanding of the principles of theosophy, and most importantly, learn how to put them into practice. Yes, Theosophy Hall.
If one were to try to be a true theosophist in these modern times, how do we belong to each and all without being namby-pamby about it?
Without being
namby-pamby about it.
Namby-pamby. We wonder in that expression, namby-pamby, if it is referring to the fact that in order to belong to each and all, you can't retain the strength of your own inner convictions, your own underlying understanding. To belong or associate oneself as a group, does that mean that one has to sell one's convictions in order to belong to another? And no theosophist would do that. No theosophist would sacrifice truth, at least as they understand it, to the opinions of any one organization or group, because none are the sole channels of it. Rather, their conviction is to find that one truth underlying all. And in that way, we can be tolerant, we can be open-minded, we can be non-judgmental, and yet determined investigators is how do you separate the false ideas that have accumulated among humanity over the generations, over the centuries, over the eras, from the original spiritual truths, which were once known by all? How do you get back to that? And that's not namby-pamby, that's real digging and has to be continued with purpose. How many of us though really want to make the effort to dig? Many people, we have to do some soul searching on that, but many people would rather be fed the answers. Let someone else distill it for us. Well, in a sense, HPB did that for us, but nevertheless, she said, theosophy will ever be a mystery to those who are mentally lazy. You still have to make the individual effort and be determined and want to know it for yourself. Like Judge said to the inquirer, you know, struggle to know yourself. And then you'll understand others. You'll understand the mysteries of life. How many people really want to struggle to know themselves, to understand their higher and lower nature? Questions that we all have to face and answer. Theosophy Hall.
The one thing in regards to that previous question, we wonder, since theosophy puts forth this idea that all is soul, that if we can understand that, really take that in, that our perception of people, no matter what they believe, who they are, we would become more tolerant, we would think. Isn't that so then?
So when we say all is soul, we are speaking of the idea that all everything is intelligent, conscious, even willing in its own way, in its own degree. What distinguishes souls or beings is the degree of their intelligence, the degree of their consciousness, the degree of their will, the degree of their accumulated wisdom. So we can look at other people or other beings and say, well, this individual certainly knows and has accomplished more in a certain area than I have. Or I see that there's something that I possess that can be of help to another human being. But beyond that, beyond those temporary relative conditions of how much knowledge or wisdom or awareness we have, is the enduring reality that we are all consciousness, intelligence in the process of evolution. And those very perceptions and ideas we now hold to be the absolute truth, as our intelligence and our awareness grows, we will see that there is more to it, that there is no end to our search for truth. And having realized that, we become more tolerant and patient with ourselves and likewise of others. MDW.
So with gratitude, we should thank those that have come before us in Philadelphia, but even more broadly, the whole theosophical movement. And that Philadelphia, there's a real connection to the movement. We know we have seen a picture of B.P. Wadia standing in the threshold of the United Lodge at some time during his many visits to Philadelphia. So there is a strong connection, and I think that everyone present this morning is that connection.
Yes. Gratitude to those who preceded us, but they were like us. They followed the same principles. And a generation or generations to come back in Philadelphia, perhaps will look on our generation in gratitude and recognize that their possibility, their opportunity was the result of the torch, so to speak, carried on consistently, persistently. And it doesn't matter whether we are expressing these ideas on Zoom or locally or in person at the lodge, although each has its benefits and importance. The point of it is the ideas are, remain alive and powerful in the world. As Plato said, ideas rule the world. And that's true with spiritual ideas. So next week, we are going to move back to the general theosophical movement here in Philadelphia and pick up with the influence of the Freemasons, which, although an international institution, as we all know, particularly is very strong and even had some of its roots here in Philadelphia. We'll learn more about that and its relationship to the theosophical movement and even the society. And then next week in our ocean class, we're moving more towards the idea of having left our study of reincarnation for now, moving more into the study of karma, the universal law. And a law of which we see is not only the foundation of the principles expressed in the Declaration of the United Lodge of Theosophists, but a law which is the scientific, philosophical backbone and foundation of the Golden Rule, which is expressed in so many different ways and commentaried on so many different ways in all the world traditions. So that one that follows karma could be an associate or a member of any one of those groups. traditions, and yet still understanding and following the idea. The advantage of the opportunity given to us in a theosophical education, though, is to study the details of karma and how it works in our lives so we can better work with it. Well, thank you for joining us, and our meeting is adjourned.